From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Rochester in the early 20th century. A company called the Halloid Photography Company put down roots, and over time it would become known as Xerox, one of the cornerstones of the Rochester business and employment landscape. This morning, as you just heard, big news announced that Fujifilm will take a majority stake. It will be a new business called Fuji Xerox, and some things we know, some we do not know. What about jobs? How many would be eliminated and where? What does this mean for Rochester and for the company that has so long been associated with Rochester? This hour, my aim is to get out of the way as much as possible and let a couple of people lead the discussion. Randy Gorbin, WXXI News Director, has long not only been the news director here, but also one of the leading voices in the business reporting scene. So, Randy, thanks for coming into the studio and doing my work for me.
Well, you know what? I'm always glad to do that when I can.
Great to have you. George Conboy is chairman of Brighton Securities. George, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan. Always happy to be here.
And I want to open it up to listeners as well this hour. If you are from maybe a Xerox family, if you worked for Xerox, work for Xerox, or you want to talk about the impact or your own experience there, you can call the program. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. Randy, we just heard some of the reporting, Beth Adams, and the work that you and the news team have been doing this morning. But let's make sure we reset for listeners exactly what is happening, what we do know and don't know about Xerox.
Okay, I want George obviously to chime in if I get any of this wrong, because he is the expert and we actually spoke to him earlier today. But basically, we've had a situation where this had been rumored for some time, Evan. There, of course, has been pressure, as George can tell you, from some of the big investors like Carl Icahn, Darwin Deason, for Xerox to shore up what they call the top line, that's sales revenue line, which has been kind of stagnant in recent years. And the company, there had been reports from the Wall Street Journal in recent days and weeks that perhaps a portion or Xerox might be either sold off to another company. There might be some kind of a deal with Fuji Xerox. Well, the latter is what actually happened. We learned this last night. First, the Journal talked about it. It was made official in the wee hours of this morning. Basically, it was announced that Fujifilm Holdings, that is the company that Xerox has had that joint venture with in the Asia-Pacific region for about half a century or so, now Fuji is basically, through that venture, going to combine everything and have a majority stake in Xerox, have just over a 50% stake. We'll talk more about this, of course, I know, with George, but in terms of employment, they do employ about 3,400 people still in the Rochester area. We reported recently, as of last Friday, Xerox announced they're going to move several hundred people, those remaining at the Xerox Tower building, over to Webster, where they have owned space instead of leased. They can save some money that way. But as far as the future of the workforce here, too early to tell, is what a spokesman told me today. Of course, the company is talking about some major restructuring and saving more than $1.5 billion annually by the year 2022. That is obviously going to impact employment worldwide. How that will impact what is mostly manufacturing operations here, we don't know yet.
George, these kinds of announcements rarely are followed by increase in hiring and employment, right? Eventually, there will be cuts somewhere.
Especially when you've got two companies, Evan, where I won't quite say they've been struggling, but they certainly aren't robust. And as Randy suggested, the top line, that is sales, have been flat for some time.
Okay, so too early to have any kind of an expectation, George, or what is the big picture outlook from your perspective?
I don't think it's too early to prognosticate on this sort of thing.
Okay.
So quick numbers. Fuji Xerox, joint venture, primarily in Asia, 45,000 employees, manufacturing, sales, distribution, everything. Xerox, 35,000 employees. In round numbers, the total, 80,000. They announced expected cuts in the near term of 10,000. The early indication is those 10,000 will be cut from the existing Asian joint venture and not from Xerox proper. But the fact is, if you're sitting at your desk in Xerox and you're saying, new company's going to have 80,000, 10,000 cuts already announced, hard to believe some of those aren't going to end up coming out of the Rochester area at some point. Maybe not tomorrow, but certainly inside of 6 months.
George, there is a narrative with Kodak, fair or unfair, and I think at this point probably at least somewhat fair, that for the company that essentially invented the digital camera, they let others pass them by and paid for that by hanging on to old models for too long. What's the narrative with Xerox that you see?
You know, a lot of the narrative with Xerox on that technology aspect and others is similar curve, less steep. So we all saw film vanish when we started using our phones, and that was a pretty steep curve. With Xerox, it's a lot slower, smoother curve We don't make as many copies. We do manipulate documents, scan them, email them, what have you. But there are two questions. Randy and I were chatting beforehand about, well, what about Xerox and what about copiers and what about the business? Two questions you ask yourself that help answer why we're at this juncture. And those two questions are this. When was the last time you pushed the button on a copier, number one? And number two, was it a Xerox copier? Those are two tough questions.
Yeah, it's certainly tough for the company to hear. Now, yeah. Randy, for the manufacturing side of things, I already had an email from a listener named Steve who said he thought Xerox was essentially gone from the landscape. I think some listeners are going to be surprised to hear 3,400 still employed in the Rochester area. That's still a pretty big number.
And they have downsized, Evan, at the Webster campus. I can't tell you exactly how many buildings are empty, but that's one reason why they are moving several hundred people out of the lease space into the space they own, because, frankly, they got plenty of space right now in Webster to do that. George can tell you, and we talked about this off the air just before we came on, that the big worry here is as this new venture, Fuji Xerox, looks to restructure and combine forces. Fuji Xerox has some manufacturing capacity in other parts of the world, including in the Asia-Pacific region. Do they move any of those operations out of Xerox? I mean, we do have some other back-office functions here, but as you know, they split off the business services arm into Condo and a whole wholly separate company right now. So basically, what you have are those 3,400 people locally. Many of them are manufacturing employees, and I'm sure, and again, George and I talked about this earlier, a lot of them probably have their resumes out. Don't you think, George?
I think they're updating their resumes today.
So, in this case, Xerox locally waiting to officially comment, Randy?
The only official comment, and I have a pretty good relationship with the spokes folks here, they talk to me on a pretty regular basis. The only thing they can tell me this morning is it really is too early for us to say we'll know better after the deal closes in the second half of the year. Now, they have talked in round numbers about the synergies, the famous corporate word for let's combine forces and maybe cut some staff. We already have the inkling they're probably going to be cutting more staff. But really, I don't think you're going to hear anything for some months on any specifics on just what operations will go or stay.
Okay. I want to ask George Conboy what you think the best case scenario is in maybe 1, 3, 5 years, not just for Rochester, but also for the company in sort of the newly formulated company to begin with. What is the best case that could happen for them here?
There is a best case scenario that says the combined company, though they would cut as much overhead as they can afford to cut and stay functioning efficiently, would gain economies of scale and would be able to compete very successfully against Canon and other competitors, and you could see top-line growth. We haven't been seeing much top-line growth, and I think Randy and I have been doing this story for about 10 years. Every 90 days when the earnings come out, we say some version of, oh, shucks, the top line is flat, but at least they made a profit. And we felt like we could replay the tape so often. But there is a best-case scenario that says, look, they're re-energized, they get better management. I think you could also say that perhaps, and I don't know the management at Fuji Xerox joint venture, but perhaps it's better than the management that Xerox has had, which, frankly, I think isn't very good. I mean, ask yourself why. Let's use some objective measures. The other day they say, we're going to take 400 people out of downtown, put them in Webster, it's cheaper. Why'd you do it the other day? Why not a month ago? Why not a year ago? How about Norwalk? If it's cheaper to have people in Webster than it is to have them in downtown Rochester, why do you need them in Norwalk? You can't move your manufacturing from Webster to Norwalk. You could move your HQ from Norwalk to Webster. It would be an awful lot cheaper. And if you're a 21st century document company, you don't need to worry about where you're working from, do you? You can work from anywhere. So why hasn't management done these things until they got poked by 16% of their ownership? I think they were complacent.
One thing I want to add, and George, I just kind of handed this to you before you came in, and maybe you could key off on this report from Moody's Investor Service, which is obviously well-respected rating service.
Sure.
And seem to be giving pretty good marks to this deal. I know the stock is up. I'm looking at the ticker right now. It's up about 5%, almost 6%. Is Wall Street and people like Moody's saying that, hey, this is probably best case scenario right now for Xerox?
Sure, because you're going to expect they're going to cut some costs. I mean, let's face it. They've said we're going to cut 10,000 out of our headcount. And if that's just Fuji, that's 10,000 out of the 45,000. That's a huge piece of expense. So from the standpoint of an analyst like Moody's, they're going to expect that ought to work out to the bottom line, even if it doesn't mean the top line goes up. Bottom line's better. And what Moody's is worried about is, can Fuji, can Xerox pay their bills? You take those kinds of costs out of your cost structure, you pay the bills easier.
So when a company lays off 10,000 people, stock prices go up?
You know, it's sad that that's the case. But what stock prices are looking at is, what are you doing to cost and how much is left over for me, the shareholder?
Long-term viability, right?
Yeah, long-term viability.
Okay, and so a listener named Mark wanted to know, is George buying Xerox stock?
I'm not a buyer of Xerox stock.
You're not?
I'm not.
Okay.
I have not been for quite some time. Any stock you can look at you have to look at it in context. Has it been good over the last week, over the last month, over the last year? Over the last year, Xerox stock has done well with the Conduent split and the recent news. That's largely been promoted by Carl Icahn and his gang. I think management wasn't doing much until Carl started agitating. But if you look at Xerox over a 10-year period, and my personal perspective about investing, and let me add the caveat that I am not making recommendations to people on the radio. Don't buy or sell stock based on what I talk about today. But you look at what happened to 10 years of Xerox mm-hmm. stock. Hope that's not a Freudian slip. 10 years worth of Xerox has been a vaporizer of shareholder value. It's that simple.
Okay.
20 years even worse.
Now, a separate email, a listener named Alan, you just mentioned Carl Icahn. Alan wanted to know, did Carl Icahn have a hand in this announcement?
Oh, geez. Yes. There was the iron fist inside that velvet glove where Icahn says, listen, existing management, we'd like to get you out of there. We think you are no good. And we'd like to hear more about this Fuji joint venture before you do anything. And we talked about who's going to lose their job. 10,000 people. We don't know who. We don't know where. We do know one thing announced this morning. The only personnel issue they announced this morning was that one person keeps their job. CEO Jeff Jacobson keeps their job. He negotiated the deal. No self-interest there. I'm sure he's doing it on a completely selfless basis. Jacobson keeps his job. Icahn didn't want that. But Icahn is interested in what helps or benefits Icahn. And if he's going to get his 10 bucks a share special dividend and sell his shares at a few bucks a share profit, he may very well cash out and walk away. He's done that before.
Okay. Now, listeners, if you've heard Carl Icahn's name a lot or you hear the term corporate rating a lot, George, what's the description you give to Carl Icahn's typical impact? And as you said, Carl Icahn's going to do what's good for Carl Icahn. Is
sure.
it generally good for the business?
You know, Carl Icahn has a very mixed record. So what I will say about Carl Icahn is he gets involved where a business may be struggling or management is complacent. That's a consistent fact when he gets involved. When he gets uninvolved, sometimes companies are better off. Sometimes companies end up being sold. Sometimes companies, most famously TWA, Transworld Airlines, end up bankrupt. He's been doing this since the 80s. He's always interested in what's best for him. But in fairness, none of us buy a stock with anything other in mind than what is best for us, the buyer. So in fairness to Icahn, he's just doing what any of the rest of us would do. He's doing it with a lot more money.
He would also probably argue that in TWA and any other example that leads to bankruptcy, well, those are companies that were failing anyway?
He has argued that, and there's a fair case for that with TWA at the time. But in this case, you know, what happens with Xerox? If we look at it, what it is right now, Icahn gets involved, agitates for changes. They split the company into two pieces, and now the Xerox portion gets sold to Fuji. That might be the best business case for that business.
I want to read a couple more listener questions. Tanya just jumped into the conversation and saying, have you mentioned what this means for Rochester and employees? Of course, and Tanya, thank you. Might have just missed off the top here. The answer is we don't know yet, but Randy Gorbin, news director, telling us 3,400 people roughly still work for Xerox in the Rochester area. There is an assumption of planned cuts. A big-time annual cost savings coming for this new joint venture, and that should mean job cuts, though we're not going to know.
We don't have any specifics yet, but
We don't know when.
We figure the second half of the year when the deal closes, and maybe we'll start getting an inkling before then, but certainly not for some months.
And when it comes to the people who have worked for Xerox, you know, Kodak has a pretty strong history of retirees and workers and forming associations, advocating. I know less about whether Xerox does, and it's been harder to get a hold of some folks.
Yeah,
we've
been talking, and we'll have some reporting during All Things Considered today. Our reporters in the newsroom actually talked to some folks with the Xerox Pioneer Club, and they say, hey, you know, we're more of a social club. We have a couple of comments from the National Retirees Association, but some of them are hesitant to really kind of weigh in at this point. I know I did a lot of reporting when Kodak went through its bankruptcy with a retirees group. Some of them were a bit reticent to talk, but of course, some of them were happy to talk, and I'm sure George can kind of back this up. Those who are affected when their benefits are impacted, and George, I don't know how this particular deal will, if at all, affect any retirees at Xerox, but I got to think they're concerned.
Here's a personal perspective. I was out over the weekend in California visiting family. My father, who's in his late 80s, was a longtime Xerox employee and is a Xerox retiree. And in fact, we came to Rochester in 1960 because he got a job at Xerox and spent 6 months sharing an office because they didn't have enough office space. He shared an office with a guy named Chester Carlson. Mm-hmm. So the concern that my folks have, and no doubt many people in Rochester have, is Xerox still pays a portion of retirees' health care benefits. And it's through all the restructurings, they continue to pay that, and that's been a nice thing. I think it's reasonable to expect that the joint venture will continue to pay that. There's been no move otherwise and no veiled threats to eliminate that benefit. But just like with Kodak, yeah. Although Kodak was a bankruptcy, mm-hmm. You can expect if they get really sharp on expenses, that's an easy expense to consider cutting.
This is just parenthetically, Evan had just shot me a note. And I honestly, I was looking for this morning in the history. George, I don't know if you know 3,400 or so people now. I wonder what the peak of Xerox employment was here way back when.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I think it was tens of thousands.
Yeah, because I know Xerox, I mean, Kodak at one point was 60,000 plus. But
yeah,
Xerox
big number, but I don't
wasn't
know.
Quite as big, but it certainly was one of our big three. And that's, you know, Evan, we're talking about that today. I mean, again, this is from more of a historical, iconic kind of perspective. We're trying to get some comment on this today from folks who've been in the area for a while. But George, don't you think there's certainly a sentimental situation here? Iconic American company now no longer to be American owned.
Oh, a huge, huge psychological impact. The industry, the copier industry, it was invented here. It was designed here. It was produced here, sold here, managed here. And even though it was a global industry very rapidly, it was started here. And so to see the last of our big three kind of sink, if not beneath the waves, down closer, it's a sad day.
You mentioned your father worked for Chester Carlson. And, of course, and I know we've done some documentaries here over the years at WXXI-TV, but, of course, the man who helped invent the Xerographic process.
He was. At the time that my father came to work for Xerox in 1960, Chester Carlson was semi-retired. He had invented the Xerographic process. My father didn't actually report to Chester Carlson. It's just that Chester was semi-retired and maintained an office out in Webster. My father was a new young guy working there, and so they put two desks in Chester's office, and my dad and Chester shared that office and became close friends.
Would love to have heard those conversations.
Yeah.
By the way, we're going to see if we can get that peak number. It wasn't 65,000, but it's a far cry from the 3,400 who are there now, and who knows going forward. One of our listeners chimes in to say, George commented on best-case scenarios. What's the worst-case scenario in this?
Oh, worst case, which I don't expect, is that the joint venture ultimately says we're going to offshore all the manufacturing to Asia. And I don't expect to see that. Do I expect to see some manufacturing offshored, some consolidation of administrative, financing, marketing? Yeah, I do expect to see losses in all those sectors.
All right, and coming up to after 12:30, we're going to hear from George Cook, Randy?
George Cook, a former, actually emeritus, retired professor at the University of Rochester Simon School of Business. I've talked to him many years about issues involving Kodak and Xerox both. He is also a former business executive, worked for Xerox for about 30 years, and I believe he worked for Ford for a number of years. And he's retired, lives in Ohio now, but I want to get his perspective as well.
Okay, and so that'll be coming up after 12:30. Listeners, again, we'd love to continue to hear from you. You can email the program, connections@wxxi.org. You can call 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. The short recap coming from News Director Randy Gorbin is news on Xerox. The recap is what?
The recap basically is that Xerox is being sold, at least the majority stake in it, just over half the company, now will be under the umbrella of the former alliance known as Fuji Xerox. They're going to keep that name, but basically it's going to mean that the actual running of the company in terms of who's the majority owner is going to be Fuji Film under this venture that they're all kind of combining. There will still be a Xerox name. It'll still be traded under that ticker symbol. CEO Jeff Jacobson will still be there. We don't know yet how many of the 3,400 employees will be impacted. We'll find out later this year as they look for some cost efficiencies. But again, Xerox, for the first time in its more than century-old history, will not technically be American-owned.
And one of our listeners on Twitter just saying, you know, what's happened to so many great American companies? Well, Business Insider has a list of some of America's most famous brands that now have fallen into foreign hands. And I wonder if George Conboy, chairman of Brighton Securities, knows the actual owners of each of these. So here are some American brands that people might be surprised are not owned in America, including American Apparel, not an American company anymore. Current owners in what country, George Conboy?
Of which now, American Apparel?
American Apparel.
Boy, I thought it was Israeli, but I don't know.
Canadian.
How about that?
Okay. Gildan Activewear owns American Apparel in Canada. Budweiser's current owner is a Belgian brewer.
Belgian and Brazilian, I believe. It was a Belgian-Brazilian consortium.
Yep. Anheuser-Busch InBev. Ben & Jerry's, I did not know.
Dutch.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Unilever.
That's where Dutch chocolate
came from. You think you were going to shut me out on this one?
No.
I got some answers for you.
But if you would have given me that list and you said there's still one American company here, I probably would have said Ben & Jerry's. I did not know that. Burger King, current owner, is a Canadian fast food company. Restaurant Brands International. Yep. Trader Joe's, not an American company.
German, that's right. Yeah, that's the same company that owns Aldi's.
Aldi Nord. That's exactly
He's the Jeopardy of business.
I have a job to do. It happens to be about this topic.
GE, General Electric Appliance, current owner.
China.
Chinese consumer and electronics company, Haier, H-A-I-E-R.
Yes,
Haier. Yep. 7-Eleven, not an American company.
I believe that's Japanese.
It is. It's a Japanese retail group. Yep. 7 and I Holdings, the Japanese retail group. And the Holiday Inn, not an American company.
Boy, I don't know that one.
Intercontinental Hotels is a British hotel company.
How about that?
Holiday Inn. So now you know one of our listeners just sort of lamenting these American brands that are not American. How much do we care about that, George?
I don't so much, because if you think about it, let's go back to Ben & Jerry's. You can buy stock in Unilever, right? It trades on the New York Stock Exchange. You want to be an owner, buy a share of Unilever, and you're an American owner of Unilever. But I think here's what I would point to. Absolutely, these are iconic brands that we grew up with. We know a lot of them. We still use. But let's not forget what's happened. As some of these older technology or simple technology companies, I mean, ice cream is pretty simple technology, as some of them see their ownership shift or their fortunes decline, let's look at the biggest corporate behemoths bestride the globe today, and aren't they all American? It's Google. It's Apple. It's PayPal. It's eBay. It's Uber. There are a ton. And these are companies that are brands on everyone's lips, and they are 100% American, at least in terms of their progenitor. But even those companies, you want to own stock in Google, you can buy it. And anyone can buy it from around the world. So when people ask me, how come our stock market's up 30% in the last year? It's not just that Americans are buying American stocks. The world invests here. If you live in Russia, you're afraid that Putin and his buddies are going to steal your money. If you live in China, you're afraid they'll put kerosene in the baby formula. Latin America and Africa barely exist from a financial perspective. When there is money, it finds its way to the U.S. It finds its way to our stock market. And these companies, is Google an American company? I think you could say so. But they operate around the world. They have employees around the world. They have shareholders around the world. It's a global company founded here.
On social media, you are... I don't know if dismissive is the right word, but you were playing down the concerns about a big down day on the market yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, it took us all the way back to thank you for reading my tweets, by the way. It took us all the way back to mid-January. Shucks, that's a huge hit, and we're back up 100 points today. Why were we down yesterday? We were down because Jeff Bezos of Amazon, Jamie Dimon, CEO of JPMorgan Chase, and Warren Buffett of Berkshire Hathaway said, we're going to get together, we're going to do a not-for-profit kind of health thing, and I think... okay, they want to disrupt healthcare. They've got a lot of employees. They've got a good base. Maybe they can do things about healthcare that will disrupt or help. And people sold off health stocks. But Warren Buffett took over Berkshire Hathaway in the 60s. Took 20 years for Amazon to get where it is. And Jamie Dimon's been with J.P. Morgan probably 30 years, if you consider predecessor companies. So I don't think healthcare is going to be disrupted tomorrow. And therefore, I don't think that the stock market is going to go out of business tomorrow.
George, I do 500 hours of live radio a year. I read everything.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Including your tweets.
Thank you very much.
Let's get our only break of the hour. And in a moment, you're going to hear from George Cook. We're going to continue the discussion on big news regarding Xerox and still some things we know, some things we don't know about the future of Xerox in the Rochester area. But certainly as kind of the last of what we would call the big three here. So some important developments today. So we're talking about that with George Conboy, chairman of Brighton Securities. Randy Gorbin, WXXI news director, is in studio with us, helping lead our coverage today. We're taking your questions, phone calls and comments and emails as well. And let's get that break and we'll come back here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the Reshaping Rochester series is back, and the first discussion of 2018 focuses on creating places we care about. What is a walkable community? What is a complete street? I know these are buzzwords, but in one city near Detroit, it's actually happening. Birmingham, Michigan is known as being the most complete implementation of new urbanism. We'll talk about how next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Important news with Xerox, and I'm going to have Randy Gorbin, our news director, introduce our next guest who is on the line with us now.
And a man I've spoke to for a number of years about a number of business topics, George Cook, is a professor emeritus, a retired professor of marketing at the University of Rochester Simon School of Business. He also has worked at a number of companies, including worked at Xerox for about 30 years in various capacities, and also Ford. First of all, George, I know you're retired in Ohio, but thanks for being around when we check in with you today.
My pleasure, Andy. It's always good to talk with you.
Tell us just by way of background, when did you work at Xerox? What did you do there exactly?
Well, I worked at Xerox from 69 to 2000. I think that's 32 years or something like that. I was head of national account marketing and national account service and a lot of customer service organizations. Started in Detroit, went to Boston, took over the operation up there, and then came back into Rochester, the division office, where I spent several years there in those two capacities.
George, what did you think or say when you saw any of the news wires or anything online today about this deal? How did you react to that?
Well, I guess, Randy, I would say I wasn't surprised, because I think, as we all know, that the traditional copying and office printing market is declining. Businesses are going paperless. And I think this strategic decision to merge the two companies together was probably an idea about leveraging the strengths of both and complementing each other, because they both got good products. R&D is very good, supply chain process and all that stuff. So I think it was maybe a long time coming, but needed. And I think it was pretty much pushed by Carl Icahn and another individual who, I guess his name was Darwin Deason, I think it is. They had a major stake, about 15% in Xerox, and they were pushing the buttons to get Xerox cranked up again, so to speak.
Yep. Well, George, Evan Dawson here, and I wanted to jump in with your own perspective, having been there for almost 32 years, as you said, 1969 to 2000. Was there a feeling, as you approached towards the end of your years at Xerox, that change was going to be disruptive in the same way that might have been for Kodak? I mean, I'm looking at the landscape of Rochester's Big Three, and the interesting theme is innovation, change-making innovation that made this community proud, that made the community thrive, but the kinds of innovations, particularly at Kodak and Xerox, that did not keep up with change for consumers in its own sector. And I wonder if the feeling toward the end of your employment was that it was going in that direction.
Well, I think you're spot on there. I would say, and it's pretty much a well-known fact, that industry and companies continuously go through what we'd call an evolutionary set of processes, with advancing technologies, pushing the button, obviously. And you either keep up with these fast-moving technologies, or you reinvent yourself, or you no longer are the industry leader like you once were. And I think you mentioned both companies, the Big Three, actually, experienced this. So, having known Xerox for a long time, way back to 69, I would say the company, which is formerly Haloid, as you know, had a brilliant and a really successful storied past and made a lot of shareholders a lot of money. And I think really giving the company credit, and I have to do that easily, it stood for and represented the most important policies and really things a leading company should stand for, and that's employee growth, employee satisfaction, state-of-the-art products, and I think great respect in the communities that they served. I would say this, though. Will there be some sad and perhaps gloomy faces after this is over, I guess at the end of the year or the second half of the year? With no question, probably so. But I think primarily between those employees in the past who served the company, I would say well, in its, I guess I would call it the glory days. But who knows, this major merger might reinvent both companies for future glory days, you know?
Well, and George, I'd like to ask you about best case, because we were talking with George Conboy, chairman of Brighton Securities, about sort of best case, worst case. You know, Unfortunately, my mind goes back to the television show The Office, in which the CEO of the Dunder Mifflin Company put together an ad campaign, and the ad campaign theme was limitless paper in a paperless world, which, you know, which was a, yeah, unfortunately, a little bit of a harbinger for some Rochester companies that weren't quite so tone deaf, but maybe weren't seeing the changing landscape around them. Is there, I don't know if there's a magic formula, but do you think it is that this is unfortunately typical for companies that innovate in this way, but then get beholden to the products they're making? Or have you seen examples of companies that can kind of transform and stay thriving, not sort of downsize, but still stay leaders in their own sectors?
Well, I think companies go through this process, as I mentioned before, and it's just as natural as a day is long. Yeah. And technologies, as I said previously, pushes those buttons on those company heads to reinvent themselves or keep up with the technology. An old-line company, a big company in Detroit called General Motors, which we all know about, went through a very perilous period of time. Not necessarily technology, but to some degree technology, because of the electric cars and all that stuff. And they have come through, with some help from federal government taxpayers, I should say, very, very nicely. And they are making big-time profits right now and back in the lead, I think, in terms of a major U.S. corporation. So that's one example, probably not the best example, but you got companies like Apple and so forth that Microsoft are really pushing the button on this stuff.
So what is the best case and worst case you see coming out of today's news then?
Well, I think it's a good thing. It's a combination. There's a combination of strengths there and I guess technology and so forth. They're going to leverage that. And I think the way they're setting it up, as I understand, is I think Jeff Jacobson will be the new CEO. And then I'll never pronounce this right. Shigetada Koromori or something like that is going to be the chairman of the board. So they're going to be sharing top-level responsibilities. But I think a key name or a key point is that they're both going to maintain their same brand names. But the company will be called Fuji Xerox. And, you know, a lot of people from the U.S. will look at that and say, whoops, something happened. But I think the end result, if everything works right, the way they're planning it, the way they've set it up and structured and organized, will come out a better company. I have to say that because I think that's true.
Yeah, George, Randy here again. Just in terms, and I know your expertise, among other things, was in marketing when you were at the U of R as well. As you say, they're going to keep the Xerox brand name if there is. And before we brought you on, Evan rattled off a bunch of companies that people may not know actually have owners that are based in other countries. Do you think the perception of Xerox products would be impacted by people knowing that, hey, you know, really it's Japanese-owned technically, or do you think having the Xerox brand name, whoever does believe in that Xerox brand is still going to go ahead and buy it?
Well, I think, Randy, because they're keeping, I think this is a smart decision on their part. They're both keeping their individual product brand names, but the company will be called Fuji Xerox. So I think they've thought that through, and I don't think that there'll be a negative backlash in terms of the way we used to look at Xerox products and copiers and printers. I think that'll go along okay. It may take a while to get used to that, but remember, the Fuji Xerox and the Xerox USA combination has been in place, I think, since 1960s or 62. So that's not, I think people might have surprised that, might not be surprised that that was going to happen. I really do.
All right. So George, before we let you go, you know, we have talked in recent months about the changing definition of made in the USA. Sometimes it's a conversation about, well, it may be manufactured here, but it's foreign owned. In other cases, on the automotive side, there are, you know, it's much more complicated to know what it truly means to buy an automobile that's made in America. Is that term losing any currency or value to you? Do you think it's become more complex?
You mean just in general or because of the Xerox thing?
Well, I mean, I think this is all tied into what consumers might struggle with understanding what made in the USA or made in America is.
Obviously, our president's talking about made in the USA, a big deal today. I think he mentioned that last night on State of the Union. I think we still have down deep in our heart, made in USA is better than made someplace else. Although I think there's a certain segment of our population would say, I don't believe you, George Cook. I think sometimes these products are pretty high quality that come from foreign countries and companies. So I don't think that, and specifically Xerox, because they're maintaining that brand name, that it's going to be negative, and I don't think people look at it negative anyway. I think it'll be okay in that regard, in terms of your question.
Thanks for taking the time, George. Randy, anything you want to add here?
I think we're all set for now, but George, parenthetically, is my buddy. Keeps me apprised of sales of antique radio, so we'll talk soon, George.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Sales of antique radio?
He always gives me the guy?
He
gives me links to estate sales because, you know, I collect table models from the 40s and 50s, whatever. I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but George has been a good resource for me in that regard.
Randy's office is a shrine to...
I bring the stuff
cars that turn left
right.
continuously
okay.
at very high speeds.
Don't bring up the NASCAR stuff now. My reputation is already...
And antique radio.
Okay.
If you're just joining us, we're responding to news this hour. Big news on Xerox. Though if you woke up this morning and maybe heard on WXXI radio or saw on WXXINews.org that there's big news regarding Xerox, you might think there's a folding going on. We don't know that. I mean, this is not the announcement that the end is here, Randy.
It's really just the announcement that we had been anticipating. We've been talking with George Convoy and others about this in recent days after reports in the Journal, Wall Street Journal, other places that maybe the company would be sold in some fashion, pressure from the big investor to do something with the company. And precisely that is what happened overnight. I think now when the dust settles in the next several months, we'll see what the impact will be on Rochester. Right now, we're just kind of speculating.
Now, Barry emails the program and says, Evan, you mentioned more than 3,000 people working for Xerox, but does anyone still make anything here, or is this all office jobs? It's a good question, but I don't know the answer.
They are still making, George, I know they're still doing manufacturing and design, and I do get press releases from time to time about R&D they're doing here. So, yeah, I mean, pretty much, would you agree, George, it's pretty much, it is really the manufacturing and development that is what the bulk of our Xerox operations
are. The bulk of the employees in Rochester area, if not direct assembly line jobs, are involved in design, research, manufacture of units, copiers, inkjet units, that sort of thing.
Okay, and so,
right here.
Again, though, if you are someone who thinks that there's no manufacturing at all in this country anymore, that's not the case, and it's not the case with Xerox, though we don't know going forward what that means. If those jobs move or are eliminated, Xerox takes them where, George?
Well, the traditional thought would be, especially with this joint venture, if they move the jobs, they move the jobs to Asia. But we hear a lot over the last year or so about onshoring jobs. And are there dynamics that suggest you want to have manufacturing in this country? There probably are. In addition, when you have any kind of a high-tech manufacturing operation, I think you could call Xerox's manufacturing operation fairly high-tech, the research jobs, the design jobs that go into that manufacturing, you tend to have a knowledge hub in a place. And it can be hard to recreate that elsewhere. So there's some value to this manufacturing operation. It's not going to be just, we're moving in, we're shutting it down, we're taking it elsewhere. There will likely be some job reductions, but I don't think you're going to see them come in here and put the key in the door 6 months from now and shut it down.
Listeners, if you want to call the program on the Xerox news or your experience, maybe there's a Xerox connection in your family, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. George Convoy from Brighton Securities stressed earlier, he's not coming on the radio to give stock buying or not buying advice, but you did mention it's been a long time since Xerox was a buy for you.
Oh, yes, very much.
So I don't want to date myself, but I want to just at least say I don't know what the stock situation of the Xerox and Kodak were in the 1980s, for example.
Yeah.
Strong?
Yes, Xerox was fairly strong. Kodak started to falter in the mid-80s. Kodak's stock started to falter. The company itself was healthy, producing, employing a lot of people, but the stock wasn't so hot, and I wasn't sanguine on Kodak stock for a long time. Xerox I was fairly close to, but largely avoided the stock. The problem happened, really, if we go into a little bit of history with Xerox, was in the late 90s, the CEO, Paul Allaire, and his chief financial guy, Richard Thoman, were essentially cooking the books. And how those guys escaped going to jail is, I guess, the same way every corporate chieftain who cooks the books escapes going to jail. But they escaped going to jail in the conventional way. Xerox stock dropped from $60 to $20 in about 98 or 99. And everybody in Rochester wanted to buy the stock. Every stockbroker in Rochester got a call saying, holy cow, Xerox was $60 yesterday. It's $20 today. I want to buy it. And we spent a lot of time telling people, please don't buy that stock because we don't know what all is behind that and the veneer hasn't peeled back. They got new management. The stock ultimately went down into the single digits in the early 2000s. And Mulcahy came in. And she is largely credited with turning the company around and saving them from what probably would have been insolvency and bankruptcy, frankly. So the Mulcahy CEO regime was good. She turned that over to Ursula Burns. It was a period of profitability, although stagnant sales. I'm not sure you can hang all that on Ursula, but sales were stagnant. And now you have Ursula stepping away, and you've got the current regime.
Where did the stock ever recover to any sort of close to its previous?
No, not well. Again,
certainly
depends
not
on
the $60 range, right?
Never got near that $60. Now with the split, it's back up to what was the equivalent of the 20s some 15 years ago. But unless you timed your purchases perfectly, you've had a hard time making any money on Xerox stock for a long time.
And that's interesting because, you know, George, I certainly understand the mentality. And as you say, $98.99, you go from $60 to $20, and a lot of people are thinking, it's bottomed out.
Yep.
This is a buy moment.
That's what they thought.
How do you try to distinguish in that moment yourself as someone who either advises people or makes investments yourself to know, well, that's a tremendous drop, but don't be convinced that it's at the bottom yet?
A lot of times, Evan, it will be based on what caused the tremendous drop. So if it's external news, news of a competitor, news of some change in government regulations, news of the weather, whatever it might be that causes this drop, we might say, gee, that seems like temporary news. The pendulum will swing back. That might be okay. But when you had a case like this where literally they were mismanaging the company so badly that they were at risk of criminal charges, and in fact, there were, I think, serious fines levied against some of Xerox's senior management, seven-figure fines, if I remember correctly. Randy here is not.
I'll have to look up. I vaguely remember some.
Here's
of the
thing
details.
That drove me and most other people crazy at the time. The Xerox senior management were fined by, I think it was the Securities and Exchange Commission, and Xerox paid the fines on behalf of management. Management didn't have to reach in their pocket because the company had indemnified them. So that was really a terrible thing.
All right, let me get a couple of listener comments here. Joel wants to know, is Xerox getting into 3D printing? That seems a natural fit.
Not to the best of my knowledge. I don't think they've ever had anything to do with 3D printing.
Randy, I don't think
I have
so.
Not, I have not heard of that, if it has happened.
Okay. Fred emails the program to say, does Fuji currently have workforce in Rochester and operations? Is that possible occupancy for the Xerox Tower?
I think the Xerox Tower is, no. They sold the tower. They're moving their last people out. There's not going to be anything going on in the tower. Fuji may have a few people now and might have a few more because it is going to be a joint venture, but I don't see it as huge employment growth here.
Let me grab a phone call, and this is Dave in Henrietta, who was at Xerox for 30 years, Dave.
Yeah, about 30 years. I had a quick question. Mr. Convoy?
Yes, sir.
Are you related to Bob Convoy?
That's my dad. I was seeing him over the weekend.
Okay, I worked with Bob Convoy in human resources at Xerox for many years. I just wondered, and I went through Xerox I was in HR for years, almost my whole time. So I took, I did a lot of closing plants and laying people off.
Well, Dave, and, back when you worked with my dad, you know they didn't call it HR. They called it personnel back then. But
I know.
Thanks for the memory. Yeah, he was in personnel at Xerox for a long time.
Yes, he was. And I just wanted to say hi.
Well, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Thanks for the phone call, Dave. Appreciate that. And what was it? It wasn't HR.
They called it personnel. They were personnel managers back then.
Personnel managers. You know, back to Fred's email, Xerox Tower. What's the concern or the expectation for the future there, George?
I think it's going to be just another office tower in Rochester that Buckingham Properties will rent out to whoever they can rent it to.
Okay.
I don't think there's a Xerox tie there anymore.
Okay. I mean, I guess it'll always be called Xerox Tower, I assume. No?
Well, who knows?
I mean, it would sort of be colloquially be known as
Xerox. People will call
it
that.
We'll know it that way, but in New York, they still call Avenue of the Americas 6th Avenue, and the Bausch & Lomb Tower, what do they call it now, Legacy Tower?
Legacy Tower. Yeah. I worked, you know, when I worked my previous employer for years, I worked at what was the HSBC building, but it's, what is it, 5-star?
5-star,
so
big letters.
They can change the name. People just call it what they want to call it.
And you know, I'm assuming that it'll always be Xerox Tower, but a generation from now, Rochesterians might not even know what Xerox was. I mean, those who care about history
will. Well, you go back to those two questions of mine. When was the last time you pushed the button on a copier and did it say Xerox on it? And you ask young people, Kodak's brand equity has already evaporated on people. People are a lot, there are a lot of younger people than I am, but people younger than you don't have any brand equity with Kodak anymore.
Yeah, and I recall one of my first jobs was working in a Modo photo. Remember the one-hour photo lab?
Yes, 1 hour.
I was very good at quick turnarounds and very good at placating angry customers who thought, I'm paying $16 for one roll of film? And I would tell them, well, you're getting doubles, and it's matte finish. But right at that time, you know, digital was happening, and Kodak rolled out Advantix, if you remember
Advantix,
that. And I just remember thinking, this seems like maybe not the direction to go in. And I don't know if there is an analog there for Xerox, but I will say when it comes to companies, the reason I brought up the share prices in the 80s, George, was, you know, the retirees of Kodak, the retirees of Xerox have concerns. You know, what does this mean for them? And I'm wondering, will we ever see an era again where employers have tens of thousands of employees, stock prices are strong, and the benefits are just rolling? Is that an era that's sort of bygone?
I think you're seeing that now at places like Google and Amazon. And I think maybe the benefits and some of the salaries aren't what we'd like them to be traditionally because they're very competitive, but they're hiring a lot of people and they do provide benefits. They're just not doing it here in Rochester where we see it.
I confess, I don't know how good the benefits are compared to where they were, say, decades ago.
Very hard to say.
Yeah, but anyway, the point being, you're not convinced that era is totally gone.
Not totally gone.
It's going to be a well-run company, very profitable.
I think there have been structural changes in industry in general which say that the idea of a pension, that I'm willing to say is gone.
Okay.
No more pension.
So, Randy, what are the questions as we go forward now with Xerox? And you know, for you, what are the big unknowns at this point?
Really, employment is the big unknown. You know, as we've been saying this hour, we probably won't find out till mid-year when the deal is complete. I'm just really curious, out of the 3,400 or so people, how much of the manufacturing operation they will keep here. And B, even if they do keep some manufacturing operations here, will they find that they can do it with fewer of them because maybe they move some of those operations to other Fuji Xerox sites? So that to me is the main question. And I guess the long-term just viability of the company. I mean, we always say that about the big companies here that have either come and gone or changed radically over the years. You know, certainly there's a big history here, as we talked about way back to the early 20th century. You know, will Xerox in some form continue to exist? Those are the two big questions I would have.
And Fred emails to follow up saying, you know, the question on local office space occupancy rate is a possible future conversation on Connections. It's not a bad idea, Fred, because, you know, there are times where you hear about, you know, not just residential, but also office space. Is there room, et cetera, et cetera? What are you hearing, Randy?
Yeah, I was going to say, ironically, I did this during my local business report on Monday, but I talked to somebody from CBRE, which is the big commercial real estate firm. They do an annual report. I always get a kick out of looking and seeing where the vacancy rate is. I think it was in the area for what they call Class A, the better space. Maybe it was 20%. I can't remember. But the number had come down, which is a good thing. In other words, there's more of that space being taken up, either by some of it being converted to other uses, in some cases more people residentially living downtown, or just, you know, better economy, more companies wanting to locate. So I'd be really curious. That Xerox is so much, I can't remember the square footage, but it's a lot of space. I'd be curious to see how that gets absorbed, and I'm sure Buckingham is the company that, you know, they own the building, and I'm sure that's their biggest question right now, too. And I've seen one of their executives in recent days say, you know, that is going to be a challenge. This lease was going to go on for another 3 years. They ended it early at Xerox, so really, that's a lot of space to put on the market. Really curious to see what happens with that.
Yeah, me too. And Fred, thank you for that email, and I'm thinking of the Heidi Zimmermeyers of the world, of Rochester Downtown Development Corporation, members of Lovely Warren Administration, the Vinny Espositos of the world. They've got a pretty good handle on what's out there, what's available, and it is a good question. So we'll see on the future of Xerox Tower and how long it's called Xerox Tower in the future. A few minutes left here, and George Conboy, when people think about Kodak, when people think about Bausch & Lomb, when people think about Xerox, I think there was at least a lot of pride in local companies doing well, getting a chance, maybe, if you like it, to invest in local companies. Are there any good investment, good buys locally anymore these days?
Oh, he's asked me about good buys, Randy.
Wow.
I don't give investment advice on the
air.
I think there are good companies.
But I'm doing that in the context of feeling good about local
companies. Oh, no, we can feel good about local. You look at some local companies, a couple different ends of the scale. You've got Constellation Brands and Paychex, both of which are big, well-regarded companies with, in the case of Paychex, a national reputation, Constellation, an international reputation, and they're right here, and they're very, very local companies. On the small end of the scale, you've got a company like Vuzix that's making some pretty innovative kind of eyeglass computer type
virtual
stuff.
Virtual reality glasses. And
yes, indeed.
For commercial uses.
In fact, they signed a deal with Apple recently, I think.
Yeah, so. And so so there are things happening in Rochester that are public companies that get a lot of repute, but they don't get as much attention because they don't have an office tower downtown that we can call the Vuzix Tower. So, but the one thing I'll say about this in retrospect is, we talked a lot about Kodak years ago suffering from what I called the curse of profitability. And Xerox is another great example. They invented the computer mouse. They invented the graphical interface. They invented Ethernet. And they never commercialized those things because their core business of push a button, get a copy was so profitable. Why waste your time with a computer mouse? Who needs that? Right?
Against my better judgment, I'm going to grab one more phone call. Chris in Pittsford, got to keep it tight. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, I just want to say that I think we're going to see a lot more of this locally going forward. Of the top 53 metro areas in the United States, only 5 bus population between 2010 and 2016. Rochester was one of them. Buffalo, Hartford, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh. So these population losses, they're somewhat irreversible over the short haul, certainly. I don't see such a rosy picture, so I hope Fuji Xerox is successful. I don't see retaining a lot of jobs here going forward. This is a big problem in America. So I think we need to have a more honest discussion about what the economy is really like in this area, and that the county is shrinking, the metro is shrinking, and Western and Central New York are still shrinking. And I'll listen to comments off there.
All right, Chris, thank you. George Convoy, Brighton Securities. What do you make of that?
Brighton Securities is growing. Wegmans is growing. Constellation Brands is growing. Paychex is growing. It's a little bit like before when we talked about Unilever buying Ben & Jerry's. And we said, boy, these are iconic companies. But there are new iconic companies coming up, the Googles, the Apples, the Amazons of the world. So there's always creative destruction going on in the corporate world. It's sad to see some of these behemoths that we know so well get smaller. But there are other things that are growing, and I'm hopeful for Rochester.
And Tess and Webster wanted to know, what effect would the recent announcement have on the Xerox pension fund, which she says is already underfunded?
It's a serious concern, but I think, as your other guest mentioned, the joint venture should be good. I think the pension should be safe.
Thank you, Tess, for the email. Thanks for listeners' interaction. And George Convoy, chairman of Brighton Securities, always helping us break it down. Thanks for being here, as always.
Thanks, Evan.
Randy Gorbin, you going to go back to the newsroom?
I've got a lot of work to do.
Your day's not over yet.
Okay.
Randy is one of the smartest and most experienced minds on the local business scene. Big news with Xerox, and if you missed any of it, you can jump on WXXINews.org and follow all of the developments there. Short break, more connections coming up next.